Welcome back. I'm now going to continue the study of the incorporation of churches. What does American law say that an incorporated church is? American law says that a corporation is an artificial being, invisible, intangible, and existing only in the contemplation of law. As a mere creature of law, it possesses only those properties which the charter of its creation confers upon it, either expressly or as incidental to its very existence. These are such as are supposed best calculated to affect the object for which they were created. It is essentially the legal identity of a set of contractual obligations and entitlements. A corporation is not a natural person, but rather an artificial person, that is, a legal fiction or a creature of statute. The attributes of a corporation may include the capacity of perpetual succession, the power to sue or be sued in the corporate name, the power to acquire or transfer property and do other acts in the corporate name, the power to purchase and hold real estate, the power to have a common seal, and the power to make bylaws for internal government. The incorporator's choice of a particular statutory framework for incorporation is not dispositive of the corporation's nature and status. The corporation's declared objects and purposes are determinative. That is a quote from American jurisprudence, and it's true for church corporations. The civil law makes very clear that the sovereign of the corporation is the state. The law says this: no corporation can exist without the consent or grant of the sovereign, since the corporation is a creature of the state and derives its powers by legislative grant. The power to create corporations is one of the attributes of sovereignty. There is no inherent right to conduct business as a corporation. The right to conduct business as a corporation, being a privilege, may be withheld by the state or may be made subject to appropriate terms and restrictions. Because the granting of the privilege to be a corporation and to do business in that form rests entirely in the state's discretion, a state is justified in imposing such conditions on that privilege as it deems necessary, so long as those conditions are not imposed in a discriminatory manner. Now, remember this: no matter what state, the law of the jurisdiction in which a corporation is organized governs who may form a corporation, how it is formed, and the powers it will have after it is formed. I continue quoting from American law, American jurisprudence specifically. The right to act as a corporation is a special privilege conferred by the sovereign power. And until there is a grant of such right, whether by special charter or under general law, there can be no corporation. Notice how many times in the law the word sovereign and sovereignty was used. Sovereign means possessed of supreme power, unlimited in extent, absolute. And that definition is from Black's Law Dictionary. Thus, according to civil law, by incorporating, a church places herself under another head, which is at odds with her other head, the Lord Jesus Christ. The sovereign state is at least partially over an incorporated church, which is an invention of civil government. God is the only head or sovereign over a New Testament church. Since the 1819 Trustees of Dartmouth College versus Woodward case, which solidified existing principles, the basic principles regarding incorporation of churches have not changed. A corporation is defined as an artificial person or legal entity created by or under the authority of the laws of the state. An association of persons created by statute as a legal entity. The law treats the corporation itself as a person which can sue and be sued. The corporation is distinct from the individuals who comprise it. Such entity subsists as a body politic under a special denomination which is regarded in law as having a personality and existence distinct from that of its several members, and which is by the same authority vested with the capacity of continuous succession, irrespective of changes in its membership, either in perpetuity or for a limited term of years, and of acting as a unit or single individual in matters relating to the common purpose of the association within the scope of the powers and authorities conferred upon such bodies by law. Corporations are classified as public and private. A public corporation is one created by the state for political purposes and to act as an agency in the administration of civil government, generally within a particular territory or subdivision of the state, and usually invested for that purpose with subordinate and local powers of legislation, such as a county, city, town, or school district. These are sometimes called political corporations. Private corporations are those founded by and composed of private individuals for private purposes as distinguished from governmental purposes and having no political or governmental franchises or duties. A church is a private corporation. If organized by private persons for their own advantage, or even if organized for the benefit of the public generally, as in the case of a free public hospital or other charitable institution, it is nonetheless a private corporation if it does not possess governmental powers or functions. Public corporations are not voluntary associations as private corporations are, and there is no contractual relation between government and the individuals who compose the public corporation, as there is with the private corporation and the individuals who compose it. The civil law of incorporation excludes God entirely as regards certain matters controlled by the contracts created by incorporation. God and His principles are not part of or included in any of those contracts. A court will not consider biblical principles in a matter involving a contract dispute out of an incorporated, quote-unquote, church. The court will only look to secular laws and cases. Instead of the agreements being between the covenanting entities and the covenanting entities and God, the agreements created are between the contracting entities, the members of the incorporated church, between each contracting entity and the state, each church member and the state, and between the entity thereby created and the state. Incorporation of a church creates a contract which places an incorporated church under the contract clause of Article 1, Section 10 of the United States Constitution. I quote from American jurisprudence, quote, "The charter of a private corporation is a contract and entitled to protection under the provision of the United States Constitution prohibiting the several states from passing any law impairing the obligation of contract." The contract clause reads in relevant part, "No state shall pass any law impairing the obligation of contracts." A corporate charter frequently is described as a contract of a threefold nature. That is, a contract between the state and the corporation, a contract between the corporation and its members, and contracts between the members themselves. The charter also is spoken of as a contract between the state and the corporators. The result of this contract is an artificial person or legal entity created by or under the authority of the laws of the state, an association of persons created by statute as a legal entity which can sue and be sued. God is not included in the contracts created by incorporation, nor does God desire to be included. That contract is outside His perfect will, since He desires His churches to choose to remain under Him only. Other contracts are created by the bylaws of the corporation. Contracts between the members of the church corporation and contracts between the corporation and its members. The multiple contracts created by the articles of incorporation and the bylaws entangle the incorporated church with earthly concerns. Contract is a humanistic or enlightenment principle. The contract clause has been used by civil government to control and attack the marriage of Christ and His church. The contract clause applies earthly principles to a spiritual entity. How? To answer succinctly, contract law leaves God and His principles out of the equation. Under contract law, two or more equal persons, alone and without God and His principles, form a contract to which the state is a party and actually the controlling party, as opposed to a biblical covenant in which God is an active and controlling party. A contract is an earthly agreement designed by man. Contract treats the parties as equal people with equal voices, and God and his principles are excluded. Pursuant to laws devised by civil government, disputes between contracting parties are settled by the ruling party, the civil government. Many Christians, in seeking incorporation of a church, feel that by so doing, a church and or its members are gaining additional protection from lawsuits and from civil government. That's not true, and I'll get into that deeper in a later study. However, right now I want to say that the corporate veil can be pierced, and individuals in a corporation can be sued. Furthermore, the contract of incorporation does not protect the church from all civil governmental interference with matters outside the contract. I'm going to quote from 18 American Jurisprudence 2nd, Corporations, Section 83. Although a corporate charter is a contract that the Constitution of the United States protects against impairment by subsequent legislation, a legislature can neither bargain away the police power nor in any way withdraw from its successors the power to take appropriate measures to guard the safety, health, and morals of all who may be within their jurisdiction. Thus, the powers or privileges of a private corporation, which a church corporation is, although not subject to direct impairment, may nevertheless be affected by the operation of certain fundamental governmental powers, such as the police power and power of eminent domain. The legislature may, without impairing the obligations of a contract, by general laws impose new burdens on corporations in addition to those imposed by their charters when such burdens are conducive to the public interest and safety, notwithstanding the power to do so may not have been reserved in the charter. Moreover, the state and those acting under its authority have the right to require a corporation to incur expenses in order properly to exercise its rights and to use its property and franchises with due regard to the public needs. Corporations are subject to legislative control equally with natural persons. That is, they may be controlled in all matters coming within the general range of legislative authority, subject to the limitation of not impairing the obligation of contracts, and provided the essential franchise is not taken without compensation. Well, you say this has never happened with a church corporation. It may not have been, but God doesn't even want a state to have the power to do so. And just because it has not happened does not mean that it will not happen. The corporation is established under a charter from the civil government and conclusively established by filing articles of incorporation. I quote from Section 78 of American Jurisprudence, 2nd, Corporations. A charter is an instrument or authority from the sovereign power bestowing rights or privileges. Therefore, with regard to corporations, the term is correctly used in its limited sense only with a reference to special incorporation by act of the legislature. The creation of a corporate entity is conclusively established by filing articles of incorporation. Legislation confers corporate power through general or special statutes. Those who seek and obtain the benefit of a charter of incorporation must take the benefit under the conditions and with the burdens prescribed by the laws, whether in the Constitution, its general laws, or in the charter itself. A corporation accepting a charter consents to be bound by all of its provisions and conditions and cannot complain of the enforcement of any of such provisions and conditions if by a fair reading of the language the enforcement in the particular manner is authorized. A state granting a charter of incorporation may define strictly and limit the uses of the corporate property necessary to the exercise of the powers granted. The state, however, may not enforce any part of a charter that is repugnant to the federal Constitution. Where there is a conflict between a corporate charter and the Constitution and statutes under which it is issued, the charter must yield to the Constitution and statutes. With respect to matters to which the statutes do not apply, the Articles of Incorporation are its fundamental and organic law. Now let's go to the Articles of Incorporation. The Articles of Incorporation establish a corporation's purposes and manner of governance. The contents of the Articles or Certificates of Incorporation are commonly specified by a state's corporation statutes. Statutory requirements as to the form and content of the Articles or Certificate must be substantially followed, and the courts have not hesitated to declare an attempted incorporation invalid for failure to do so. And we've already shown that the state is sovereign of the corporate part of the church. As sovereign, the state has ultimate authority in interpreting the Articles of Incorporation. Now I'm going to quote again from American jurisprudence. Go to the books I've mentioned to get specific sites. Quote, because a corporation's charter embodies a contract between the state and the corporation and its shareholders are members, and a contract among the shareholders are members themselves. The courts employ general principles of contract interpretation when in construing articles of incorporation or a certificate of incorporation. This means that the courts must give effect to the intent of the party, as evidenced by the language of the certificate and the circumstances surrounding its adoption. The question whether a corporation's articles are ambiguous is one of law, and when determining the meaning of ambiguous provisions, the court will consider the history and surrounding circumstances to determine the party's intents. Let's go to the bylaws now. The corporate church must also have bylaws. The bylaws of a corporation are a contract between the members of a corporation and between the corporation and its members, while the articles of incorporation constitute a contract between the corporation and the state, between the corporation and its owners or members, and between the owners or members themselves. A bylaw is a self-imposed rule resulting from an agreement or contract between the corporation and its members to conduct the corporate business in a particular way. The bylaws of a corporation are the private statutes by which the corporation is regulated and functions. The charter and bylaws are the fundamental documents governing the conduct of corporate affairs. They establish norms of procedure for exercising rights, and they reflect the purposes and intentions of the incorporators. Bylaws constitute a binding contract as between the corporation and its members, and as between the members themselves. The conflict of these rules regarding bylaws with biblical principles is obvious to the knowledgeable Christian. A business or other organization is incorporated either for the benefit of the public, a public corporation, or for private purposes, a private corporation. An incorporated church is a private corporation. A corporation is deemed to be a private corporation, though it was created for the administration of a public charity where the endowments of the corporation have been received from individuals. A nonprofit corporation organized pursuant to a nonprofit corporation statute is a private corporation, where it is neither controlled nor owned by the state nor supported by public funds. A corporation organized by permission of the legislature, supported largely by voluntary contributions and managed by officers and directors who are not representatives of the state or any political subdivision, is a private corporation. As can be easily seen by the born-again Christian, according to the civil law, which I'm about to quote, and more importantly, according to the principles of the Word of God, an incorporated church is somewhat of a two-headed monster. I want to quote from Civil Law 66, American Jurisprudence 2nd, Religious Societies, Section 5, 2007. In determining the threshold question of the applicability of religious corporations law, a court will look to the provisions of the corporation's certificate of incorporation as well as the actual practices of the organization as revealed in its papers. And I continue to quote, a church society by incorporating does not lose its existence or become wholly merged in the corporation. The religious corporation and the church, although one may exist within the pale of the other, are in no respect correlative. The objects and interests of the one are moral and spiritual. The other deals with things temporal and material. Each as a body is entirely independent and free from any direct control or interference by the other. And I continue to quote from Abjur. Thus, whenever there is an incorporated church, there are two entities. The one, the church as such, not owing its ecclesiastical or spiritual existence to the civil law, and the other, the legal corporation, each separate, although closely allied. The former is purely voluntary and is not a corporation or a quasi-corporation. On the other hand, a corporation which is formed for the acquisition and taking care of the property of the church must be regarded as a legal personality and is in no sense ecclesiastical in its functions. Close quotes. Of note in that quote is the inference that a non-incorporated, non-501c3 church, which has not in any way submitted to civil government or made herself a legal entity, does not subject herself or owe her existence to civil law, and her objects and interests are only moral and spiritual. This is in line with biblical principle that a New Testament church is spiritual only and has no earthly legal attachments. Thus, one can see that an incorporated 501c3 church, since she is under two heads, gets part of her powers from God and part from civil government. Part of the church as a legal entity can sue and be sued as to both earthly and some spiritual matters. For a church to put herself in such a position clearly violates biblical principles, since a New Testament church herself is a spiritual entity only. Part of the church must have elected officers who conduct business meetings, meet statutory requirements, and so forth. A church that sees fit to become incorporated under state law is obligated to conduct its business activities in compliance therewith, including governmental regulation of its employment relationships, so long as the employment does not depend on doctrinal matters. Religious corporations are governed by the same rules of law and equity as other corporations. That again is from American jurisprudence. Statutory provisions sometimes authorize the membership of a religious society to incorporate as an ecclesiastical body with the power to make bylaws governing the selection of church officials and prescribing their duties. That an incorporated church is an artificial person and a separate legal entity has many ramifications. The corporate personality is a fiction but is intended to be acted upon as though it were a fact. A corporation is a separate legal entity distinct from its individual members or stockholders. Again, this is from American jurisprudence. The basic purpose of incorporation is to create a distinct legal entity with legal rights, obligation, powers, and privileges different from those of the natural individuals who created it, own it, or whom it employs. A corporation is a person within the meaning of the due process and equal protection clauses of the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution and similar provisions of state constitutions and within the meaning of state statutes. However, a corporation is not considered as a person under the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. And remember, the First Amendment has the Religious Liberty Clause. Are under the Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution, and I cite my authority in my books. In other words, a corporate church has given up much of her First Amendment protections since she is now a legal and not a spiritual entity. A corporation has no right to refuse to submit its books and papers for an examination at the suit of the state. At least that's an issue you would have to fight dearly. You wouldn't have to fight that if you were a New Testament church. The corporation is a creature of the state. It is presumed to be incorporated for the benefit of the public. It receives certain privileges and franchises and holds them subject to the laws of the state and the limitations of its charter. Its powers are limited by law. It can make no contract not authorized by its charter. And a New Testament church, I might add, cannot enter into contract. Its rights to act as a corporation are only preserved to it so long as it obeys the laws of its creation, the state. There is a reserved right in the legislature to investigate its contracts and find out whether it has exceeded its powers. It would be a strange anomaly to hold that a state, having chartered a corporation to make use of certain franchises, could not in the exercise of its sovereignty inquire how those franchises had been employed and whether they had been abused and demand the production of the corporate books and papers for that purpose. An incorporated church has constitutionally protected rights which are quite different and less effective than the rights she had while a spiritual entity protected by God and the First Amendment. A church which is not satisfied with God's liberty, provisions, and protections implemented by the First Amendment seeks incorporation. God is a far more strong and benevolent protector and provider than the state. When a church is not a legal entity, that church cannot sue or be sued. One can sue a legal entity, such as a corporation, but one cannot sue a church which is a spiritual house made up of spiritual beings offering up spiritual sacrifices and not a physical house made by man. Now, individuals, including members of a New Testament church, can be sued for tortious conduct and actions or tried for criminal acts. But a New Testament church as a whole cannot be sued or tried for criminal acts committed by a member or members of that church unless they are a party to that. The purpose of the corporation is at odds with the God-given purpose of a church. The purpose of a church is to glorify God by submitting herself to her husband in all things. The basic purpose of incorporation is allegedly to increase the happiness of man by creating a distinct legal entity with legal rights, obligations, powers, and privileges different from those of the natural individuals who created it, own it, or whom it employs. A New Testament church and an incorporated church have different creators. Church members under authority of and in conjunction with the sovereign state create the incorporated church. The sovereign God supernaturally creates a New Testament church, and I give verses in my books. The organization of a church and a corporation are different. The incorporated church has employees. Even should that church call their employees ministers, the state looks at them as employees, and the state is the sovereign of the corporation. Whereas a church is to have pastors, teachers, and so forth, state laws which create corporations require the corporation to have officers such as president, treasurer, secretary, and so forth. Ownership of a church and a corporation differ. Members in a nonprofit corporation are the owners of the corporation and generally play a role similar to shareholders in for-profit corporations. As has been shown, Jesus Christ owns a New Testament church. The incorporated church is partly owned, authorized, and built by God, and partly owned, authorized, and built by Satan. The corporation owns the property. The members of the corporation are not owners of the corporate property. The corporation and its members are distinct parties. An incorporated church must deal with all the government red tape that comes with incorporation. The incorporated church must now elect officers, hold business meetings, notify members of those meetings pursuant to statutory requirements, keep records, and so forth. All these secular activities take tremendous time, energy, and resources, which could be used in pursuing the God-given purposes and activities of a church. The incorporated church, which does not comply with statutory requirements, is being dishonest and could face further problems from her sovereign state. The incorporated part of an incorporated church is not the bride of Christ, the wife of Christ, but rather an extramarital, illicit relationship existing alongside the marriage. I believe that any born-again believer who loves the Lord and who has been saved any length of time at all should discern that Scripture contains no principle consistent with church incorporation. In fact, everything about incorporation of churches is anti-biblical. I have concluded after a study of the Bible, history, and the law that persecuted Christians in the early church and since until this day have understood that all they did in the spiritual realm was to be under the sole authority of the Lord Jesus Christ. They understood that they were married to Christ, and because they have loved their spiritual husband and head, have honored that relationship at the cost of their earthly physical lives. That's all I'm going to say about incorporation at this point. Next week, I'll get into federal government control of churches through the 501c3 tax exemption. We'll get into the law and the rules that go along with that 501c3. Also, I'll get into the incorporation 501c3 control scheme. It's sad, but Christians don't know what legal scholars do, that the 501c3 is a definition and control scheme. Please join me again next week, same time, same place.